And we're holding on page 42 in Yevamos, Mitzvah Chalitza Perek Shneimasar, the middle of Ois Memtes. The subject of the Perek is all about the dinim and the details of Chalitza. So one thing that points out earlier in the Perek is the Dayanim of the Beis Din that are overseeing the Chalitza have to all be, not only they can't be Gerim, it can't even be, they can't be Gerim. It has to be that at least, it has to be at least that their mother was Jewish. So Omar Rava, so in this connection, Rava says, Ger Donas Chavere Dvar Torah. Minat Torah, a Ger would be able to judge another Ger. Rashi learns that we're talking about even dinin nefashis. So we're talking about even a ger is being judged for anything that would involve that might involve the death penalty. Rashi learns that it means a ger, that Rava is saying a ger would be able to sit on a base sin for that purpose. Tosfos here and earlier in the Masechta disagrees and says no, only as far as dinin mamonis. Anyway, Shanema, Rava says, because the Pasuk says, Soim tosim alecha melech, the Pasuk says you should place over yourself a king, asher yivcha Hashem alekecha boy, whom Hashem will choose him, mikerev achecha tosim alecha melech, and the Pasuk continues, from among your brothers, you have to place a king over yourself. Meaning that the king has to be from Jewish descent, he can't be a ger or descended from Gerim. So, Rava says, we can derive from that, alecha, over you, over a born Jew, who debeinim mekerav achecha. Then you have to have not only a king, but also a dayan who's going to be superior to you, and that he's judging you. Then he has to be mekerav achecha from among the born Jews. Avo ger donas chaveira ger, but a ger who's a ger would be allowed to judge a fellow ger. Again, dinin nefashis according to Rashi, dinin mamonis only according to Tosfos. The imhoisa imam Yisrael. Now, if the guy's mother is a yid, so he's not his, both his parents are not Jews, but his mother is, then donachilu Yisrael. Then Rava says he would be suitable to sit on a beis din, even to judge born Jews. In chalitza, however, when it comes to sitting on a beis din for chalitza, it's not even enough. He himself can't be a ger, but even it has to be that both his parents are born Jews. Ad shehei aviv v'imam Yisrael, it has to be that both his mother and father are born Jews. Shenem of a nikra shmoi b'Yisrael, as the pasuk says, his name should be called in Yisrael, meaning that he has to be, as Rashi says, Yisrael mikol tzadin. He has to be a born Jew from every possible side. So neither he nor either of his parents can be a ger. When it comes to the Beis Din for Chalitza.
So the brother had son from, given from a shufa or something like that. It's not really called a Yisrael.
Right.
It doesn't actually have, the woman doesn't have to have Chalitza.
No, we're not talking about that. What we're talking about is the Beis Din that oversees the Chalitza.
Difference.
No, so the difference is when it comes to chalitza, you have to have as long as you have two people who are paternal brothers in halacha, then one of them would have to do chalitza to the other. If it comes out, even if it was married to even if one of them is married to a woman that he's also to be married to, a mamzera, so what have you? Nevertheless, kedushin are toifus, and therefore chalitza is going to have to be done. Can't do yibum because she's a mamzera, for example, but chalitza would have to be done, otherwise she can't marry anybody else. But here we're talking about the dayonim, so there it doesn't matter. So for that purpose, then it doesn't matter. You can have, now obviously if you have a ger himself, by definition, is not going to have a paternal brother in halacha, because gerishin is a guy who can cut and shener the dummy. We talked about that yesterday. But if you have a person, if you have gerim, have a child. If they have two boys, then yeah, either one of them would have to do chalitza or yibum for the other because they're still brothers in halacha. But here we're talking about, as far as that doesn't matter, it doesn't have to be Yisrael as far as that. But as far as the Beis Din, it has to be, when it says v'nikra shmoi b'Yisrael, the members of the Beis Din have to be born Jews. So right before this, the Gemara brings that one time one of the Amoraim wanted to have one of the Chachamim, Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, sit on a Beis Din for Chalitza, and Rav Shmuel had to tell him that I'm a Ger, that my father and I were both became Gerim, and therefore I would be possible to sit on this Beis Din. Tosfos, by the way, and that connection interestingly mentions, so if he's a ger, if he's a ger, how does he come to be known after his father's name, of Shmuel bar Rav Yehuda? Tosfos says there's a couple of places in Shas where we have mention of someone named Rav Yehuda in Devar. Hindavar means either he came, in some places, Hindavi is used as a translation of Kush, so that would mean that he came from Ethiopia and became a Ger. The other possibility is Hindavar might be related to the word Hindu, and in that case, it means he came from India. One way or the other, he became a Ger. He took the name Yehuda, and then his son also became a Ger along with him, Gershonis Gareth, according to Shanola Dummy, so he's known by his father's name, even though La Halacha is not considered related to him. So Rashi also points out in this connection, by the way, even though the Pasuk Mekerev Achecha is talking about appointing a king, a Dayan to a certain extent is considered like a king. In fact, we even have, there's the idea the Gemara mentions in Ksubas, we'll get to it in a few weeks, that a Dayan is supposed to be like a king, self-sufficient, not one who's looking out for Shoichad or for any kind of financial gain from being a Dayan. So therefore, so a pasuk that refers to the appointment of a king can also be darshened about the qualifications for a dayan. Further on, it talks about, now like this, what's the mitzvah of chalitza? So we know, though, the main part of the chalitza is that the yavama takes the shoe off the yavam's foot. The question is, the pasuk uses the expression, v'cholta naloi me'al ragloi. Now, the word cholatz can have a couple of different meanings. It can mean to take off, but it can also mean to strengthen. So therefore, so the Gemara asks, how do we know that the words v'cholz and naloi mean that she should take off his shoe? Maybe just the opposite. It means she should strengthen the shoe on his foot. In other words, she should tie the shoe onto his foot. So the Gemara goes through a whole discussion about that, and in the course of that discussion, the Gemara brings the following. V'hoksiv yichalitz oni ba'onyoi. So the pasuk says that Hashem will yichalit the poor person in his poverty. Now, on the face of it, that means that Hashem will give him strength to be able to bear, to be able to withstand his poverty. So that means also you have the word cholatz then means to strengthen. And the answer is no, because you can say in the pasuk it means b'schar onyoy, it means as a schar for the fact that he was poor and that was mechaper for his avedus. Yuchalsenu midina shel gehenim, then that saves him, then that extracts him from the din of gehenim. So yes, the word cholatz can mean to extract, as in to extract the foot from the shoe, which is what the yavama does for the yavam, and therefore yes, we can say that the cholta naloy means that. Okay, the Gemara says Elohodichtiv. You have another pasuk though that also uses the word the shodash cholatz in connection with Hashem saving people. Choyne Malach Hashem soviv liyireyav. The Malach of Hashem camps surrounding those who fear Hashem. Vayichaltzim So again, on the face of it, that means that he strengthens them. So again, that would mean that the shodash cholatz means to strengthen. In fact, by the way, I mean, the Gemara is going to go through, the Gemara goes through the discussion over here, and it ends up saying that, yes, the word cholatz can have at least two meanings. Actually, there's a medrash that points out that it can have as many as four meanings. Besides, for here we're saying that it can mean to strengthen, or it can mean to extract, a medrash rabbah in Parshas Bahar points out it can also mean to save. And it can also mean to strengthen, as we're saying over here, it can mean to extract, and it can also mean to give rest. Where the Medrash mentions, when we say on Shabbos, we say v'hachlit seinu, that means, it means please be willing to give us rest. The Yom HaShabbos Hazeh. So it actually has four meanings, but here the Gemara is focusing on two of them. Anyway, so again, so choyne malach Hashem sovelid eber chaltzim. So the answer is fine. Again, it means v'schau yireyav, in the schar, of those who fear Hashem, yichaltzein midina shel gehenim, Hashem saves them, Hashem extracts them from the din of gehenim. So again, the shodash cholatz can mean to extract or to remove, like what you do by chalitza. Now, Marsha and a bunch of the Mephoshim asked, so what do we mean exactly? Ba'onyoy, we can understand, as a schar for the fact that he was poor and he lived such a hard life, and nevertheless he didn't waver in his emunah in the Eibishter, then therefore he'll be saved midin shel gehenim. But what about bischar yireyav? What do you mean? If you mean that the yireyav themselves are saved, then it would just say yireyav yichaltzim. So Marsha explains that that's what it means. In other words, that, and anyway, if Choyne Malach Hashem Sov of the Yireyav, how are they even in danger of Gehenim in the first place, that Hashem would have to be Yichalitz them, that he would have to extract and save them from there. Sparsha says that's what it means. In other words, it means that we're not talking about the tzaddik himself. We're not talking about Yireyev themselves. We're talking about as a result of their schus, they're able with their schus to save other people, Medina Shogahanim. So b'schar Yireyev, for the schar of the Yireyev to whom another Yid was close to, then Hashem will save them, a person who otherwise might have gone into Gehenim, and Hashem saves them and extracts him from it. Marshall gives the examples that we have, for example, Avshalom was going to go to Gehenim after what he did rebelling against David, but David was able to schlep him out of that. And you have other examples that different Mephoshim talk about. So the bottom line is that's what it, so the word Vayichaltzeim would mean that Hashem extracts them and rescues them from Gehenim. Okay, what about, here's another one. Ela hadichtiv, another thing, you have a pasuk, v'atzmei secha yachlitz. The pasuk says that Hashem will yachlitz your bones. V'omer Rav Elazar, zuma ula shel brachos. And Rav Elazar says, you should know, this is the greatest of all brachos. And what is that bracha? V'omer Rava, zeruzi garmi. Means that Hashem strengthens the person's bones. So in other words, there we see that yachlitz means to strengthen. So we're back to the question then. Maybe the chotzenaloi means that she should strengthen, she should reinforce his shoe on his foot by tying it on rather than by untying and taking it off. What is the context of that bracha? Marsha points out that you have the psukim there in Yeshaya. We read it as Aftorah on the morning of Rosh, on the morning of Yom Kippur. We have over there brachas that are given, 6 brachas that a person gets when he gives tzedakah, and 11 brachas that a person gets when he speaks kindly, and nicely to the oni. Mephoshim discussed, do we mean the 11 include the 6? Do we mean it's another 11 on top of the 6? Whatever the case, the point is, so you have a bunch of brachas mentioned over there, and it mentions v'atzmei secha yachlitz. The point is, in other words, Marusha says that all the other brachas that you find in that context are all things outside a person's body. But here you have atzmei secha, your atzmos, the very word atzmos itself is related to the word etzem, which means the bones, yachlitz, Hashem will strengthen, so therefore that is ma'ula sheba brachas, because more than any of the other brachas, that affects you directly rather than the things around you. And so therefore, so we see, obviously that wouldn't just mean that Hashem saves the bones, midinish or Gehenim, so what would be so great about that? That's why we need, so Rava points out that it has nothing to do with Gehenim. It means that Hashem strengthens his actual bones, his actual body. Well, then we're back to the question, how are we using that Shurdish in a different sense when it comes to Chalitza? And the Rif points out another point as well. It's not like the bones exclusively go to Gehenim. If a person is going to Gehenim, it's not just his bones. So there'd be no reason to say Atzmei Secha Yachlitz means that Hashem is going to extract your bones from Gehenim. What about the rest of you? Therefore, we have to understand that it means strengthening, as Rava says. Okay, so the Gemara answers, Ain, as a matter of fact, you have mashmahochi before the, yes, as a matter of fact, the Shurdish cholatz can have either meaning. It can mean to strengthen, it can mean to extract, and as the Medrash points out, it can mean 2 other ones as well. It can mean to rescue or to give rest, but the Gemara explains here, actually, we know it means taking off the shoe, because the pasuk continues, me'al ragloi. It says she should take off me'al ragloi. The word me'al, from on his foot, makes it clear that we're talking about something that was on his foot, and she's removing, namely to remove the shoe. In this connection, speaking of chalitza, like Gemara tells, a certain min asks Ram Gamliel, and we know that min in Gemara terminology includes a wide variety of different people who don't believe in certain fundamental concepts of Yiddishkeit. Very often it means, among others, it means somebody who thinks Hashem has a body, who thinks that there's no Hashem, who thinks that there's 2 of them, etc. Very often in the Gemara it also refers to some of the early Christians, many of whom held of such ideas. So one of them says to Rav Gamliel, look at you Jewish people, amad cholitz le mori minei. You Jewish people are a people that Hashem has done chalitza from you. So in other words, the metaphor is, in other words, and he's saying, you Jewish people in Golus, like you have in the Pasuk, in Eicha, Hoysa Ka'almana. So you're so to speak, like a Shemeres Yavam, but then Hashem is rejecting you, Chas V'Shalom, like the way a Yavam might reject his Yavama, and gives you chalitza, and that's it, you have no further connection with him. It was and still is a very common argument of the Christians to argue that Hashem rejected us and chose the quote unquote more moral goyim instead of us. So it was a common enough thing that the anyway. So dichtiv, as in fact you have a pasuk, The Navi says to the Jewish people, Hoshea, Bitsonam of Koram Yochol Lavakash Hashem, they're going to come with their sheep and their cattle to seek Hashem. They're going to want to bring Korbanos. V'lo Yimtso, but they won't find Cholatz Mehem. Hashem has Cholatz from them. So that means, in other words, the Min is arguing, it means Hashem has done Chalitza with you and you have no further connection with him. So Rabbi Gamliel answers him, Shoite. Miksiv cholatz lohem. After all, let's think of how chalitza works. The Yavama is the one who does the action. She's the one who takes the shoe off his foot. But we always have the expression in throughout the Masechta is always that he is cholatz her. It's always the Yavam was cholatz liyavimdo. So if it said cholatz lahem, then yes, it would mean, because even though he's in the actual chalitza itself, he's kind of playing the passive role. Nevertheless, in Mishnah and Gemara terminology, we speak of him as having the active role. He's the one who causes the chalitza to happen. So therefore, so if it said cholatz lahem, then fine, you'd have a point. Then it would mean that Hashem has done the chalitza. But no, cholatz mehem, see, it says Hashem is cholatz from them, meaning, in other words, that you have, it's the opposite. You don't have, so to speak, the Jewish people taking off the shoe from Hashem's foot, where he's making it happen, and therefore that would mean, as you're arguing, that it means Hashem has rejected the Jewish people. Just the other way around. In effect, the Pasuk is saying that Hashem has removed the shoe of the Jewish people, picturing Hashem as the Yavam, and the Jewish people as the Yavama. So Rav Gamliel says to him, the Yavama holds to La'achin. Now consider, if one of the brothers goes and takes off the Yavama's shoe, midi meshosha isva, is there any meaning in that? Of course not. Chalitza is the Yavama takes the shoe off the Yavama's foot, not the other way around. So therefore, Rav Gamliel was telling him, you've got it backwards. The way the Pasuk is phrasing it is that Hashem is almost like, so to speak, play acting and saying, fine, I'll take off your shoe, but not that doesn't obviously do anything as far as ruining their relationship. So therefore, so Rav Gamliel was telling him that no, on the contrary, we're the Shemeres Yavam, we're the ones who rebelled against Hashem. Like in the metaphor, it's as though like she's putting down her foot and saying, I don't want to be married to you, take off my shoe and let me go. So even if he takes off her shoe, does it do any good? Of course not. That's not what Chalitza is. So the same way Rav Gamliel tells him, the rebelliousness and the not wanting to be connected anymore is not on Hashem's part. Hashem still very much wants us. We're the ones who rejected Hashem and rebelled against him. But Hashem still wants us, and Hashem has already sworn that he's not exchanging us for anybody else, and therefore we will have that relationship restored with Hashem the way it's supposed to, and we will have a Yibum, and we will have a reconciliation. Further on, the Gemara talks about the question now. So we're saying like this. We're saying v'cholta nale me'al ragli. So we have to define what part of the leg or the foot is included in the word regel. Because the word regel definitely includes the foot, but on the face of it, it also includes certain parts of the legs. And so the Gemara goes through several psukim showing that on the face of it, elsewhere, regel can mean legs. And therefore, that the a nafkamina of that would be how high up on the leg can the chalitza shoe go? How high up can the straps of it that she has to undo? How high can they go? The halacha is if they go above the knee, then the chalitza is possible. The straps have to go dafka on the bottom part of the foot. So the Gemara goes through a whole discussion in that connection. What exactly is the meaning of regel and halacha in Torah? And we see the Gemara brings on the face of it various psukim which show that ragloi can also, the word regel can also mean the leg. So here's one. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Yochanan, Sheva. Now we have like this. We have in Sefer Shoftim, we have the whole story involving Sisera. Sisera was the Knani general. He and the king that he worked for, Yavin Melech Knan, are dominating and oppressing the Jewish people for 20 years. Then comes Devorah and Barak, and they go and fight against them, and a tremendous mess happens, and Sisera's army is swept away, and they're in the water, and Sisera himself runs to the tent of Yoel Eshes Chever Akeni. To try and find a safe zone over there, because the Pasuk says that Chever and his family had a peace treaty with Sisera, so he figured he'll be safe there. And Yoel invites him in. She gives him to drink and then gets him to sleep, and then she takes a tent peg and hammers into his head and kills him. So now the Gemara fills in some of the backstory over there. Amar Rav Yochanan, Sheva Be'ilus Baal Oseh Rosha Ba'Oseh Yoim. That Rosha Sisera had relations with Uriel 7 times on that day before he fell asleep, and then she offed him. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Devorah says in her Shira after that, Bein Ragleha Korad Nofal Shachav, between her feet, he kneeled down, he fell, he lay. Bein Ragleha Korad Nofal, between her feet, he kneeled and he fell. Basher Korah, where he kneeled, Shom Nofal, there he fell, Shodur destroyed. So the Gemara is understanding, Rabbi Yochanan is understanding that each of these expressions, Korah, Nofal, Shachav, Korah, Nofal equals 7. So that means 7 times he had relations with her. And Bein Raglel, the point is, the Gemara says, obviously, where does that take place? Not between the feet, but higher up, between the legs, and therefore wouldn't that show that Regel means legs? One interesting thing, now the Gemara is going to ask how she allowed such a thing, and we're going to discuss that point. One very interesting thing that's brought, that Amami Fano says on it, we know famously the Gemara says elsewhere that Sisera had descendants who became Geirim. And it's brought to all the way back from the time of the Gaonim. Reb Nissim Gaon brings a tradition that those descendants of Sisera who became a Geirim included Reb Akiva. To be exact, Reb Akiva's father, Yosef, was a Geir. So that Amami Fano says they were actually descended from, he or Sisera was saying was Mizana with Yoel 7 times, and he says she became pregnant from that, and their descendant hundreds of years later was this guy who became the Ger Yosef and whose father and whose son was Rabbi Akiva. So she's an Eshkesish. Now there are, I believe Rabbi Yaakov Emdin wants to say on this Gemara or on other relevant Gemaras on this subject, I think he wants to say that she might not have been a Bas Yisrael. Now the whole family, Yoel and Chever, her husband, and all of them are descended from Yisrael. But I think he wants to say that not all, now usually we say Yisrael himself became a Ger, and all of his descendants did too. I think Rabbi Yaakov Emden wants to say, actually, based on this Gemara, that maybe in fact Chever's family were among the descendants of Yisrael who did not become Gerim, they were only Geri Toshav. So in that case then, for the Gemara is still going to ask how she could allow Sisera to do such a thing, because Goyim, after all, have a mitzvah, one among those Sheva mitzvahs is also not to have relations outside of her marriage with anybody else. But nevertheless, it would be at least not as severe as if she was a Bas Yisrael. But most everybody else seems to understand that she was actually a Jewish woman, that they were actually from the descendants of Yisrael who actually became Goyim.
Is that called adultery for them also?
Well, definitely, yeah. I mean, the definition of adultery is anything outside of marriage. So that's the Gemara asks, Vakam is Hanya me Aveira. So the Gemara asks, isn't she having Hana from the Aveira? Meaning, Tosfos points out, the question is not why she wasn't Moisa Nefesh. First of all, you have a concept in Halacha called Isha Karka Olavi. We have, when it comes to Znus, many times we say that the woman is considered passive in it, the man is the active partner, the woman is the passive one, and therefore not necessarily when it comes to matters of Arayas is a woman chayav to be Moser Nefesh. There was actually a good deal of discussion about that, but the Gemara mentions it in connection with Esther and Achashverosh, why she didn't have to be Moser Nefesh to not have relations with Achashverosh, and one point is, because Karka Olam Havoi. But anyway, so that would be one point over here. But anyway, Tosfos points out that, look, Fakert, it comes out from the Psukim and from the way the Gemara is explaining over here that she's the one who talked him into it. What happened was, actually, she knew that he's a dangerous enemy of the Jewish people. So here he's coming to her for shelter because he figured they have a peace treaty, but she knows better. She knows she's not going to let him go. She wants him dead also. So she had to win his trust and she had to tire him out and be able to get that he should fall asleep and then she can kill him. So therefore, so she figured this is the way to do it. So therefore, so the Gemara's question is not why she wasn't Moser Nefesh. The question is that after all, she's a tzaddikus, and after all, you find that Devorah in her Shira praises her for what she did. How could she be praising her, especially in such effusive terms, as we're going to talk about in a second, where on the face of it, after all, what she did is objectively an Aveira. Now elsewhere, the Gemara does point out, it's an example of Aveira Lashma. She was doing it L'shem Shamayim, but nevertheless, the question would be why she deserves such high praise for it. So she's having Hana from the, Aveira. The question is, in other words, like this. In the Shira, Devorah says on her, Tevorach minoshim Yoel Eshes Chever Akeni. Yoel, the wife of Chever Akeni, should be blessed more than any other women. Minoshim ba'oihol tevorach, she deserves a greater bracha than the women in the tent. Now, the Gemara, when it brings this point in a couple of other places, it brings it in particular, it brings in Nozir and in Hodias, it mentions the women in the tent refers to the Imars. Each of the Imars we find her name mentioned in connection with a tent. Here in our parasha, we have Oihol Rochel and Oihol Leah. Earlier we have Oihol Sara Imai, and we have Rivka in the tent as well. So each of the Imars is associated someplace with a tent. So now, so Devorah in Hoshira is saying that what Yoel accomplished is even greater. She deserves a bigger bracha for what she did than the Imars. So the question is, why would that be so? So she's having Hanah from the Avera. So Omer Rav Yochanan, Mishum Rav Shimon Yochai, Kol Tevosen, Shol Rishoyim, Ra Hi Eitz of Tzedikim. The answer is that any of the good that the Rishoyim claim that they're doing for Tzedikim is really, the Tzedikim consider it a bad thing. So in other words, Yoel is having no Hanah whatsoever from all of this that she's experiencing with Sisera, because he's a Rosha and she's a Tzedekis and she really wants nothing to do with him, and she's doing it only in order to save the Jewish people. Shenemar, as in fact we find in our parasha, Hashem wounds Lavan before he confronts Yaakov on Har HaGilad over there. Hashem tells him, Yishamalacha pentadabarim Yaakov mitoiv adra. Be careful that you don't speak anything to Yaakov, good or bad. Now, b'shlemen ra l'chai, you can understand why Hashem is warning Lavan not to speak anything bad, not to make any threats or anything to Yaakov. El toiv amai loy, why shouldn't he say anything good to Yaakov? El shmamina, so you see from that, tovosam shor reshoim roi hi eitzel tzedikim. What the reshoim think of as good, that Tzadik thinks of as bad. So therefore, so returning to Yoel and Sisera then, so even though on the face of it you would say, after all, she is having Hanah from the Bia, but the answer is that she's not, because he's a Rosha, and she wants nothing to do with him, and therefore for her it would be a Ra, and she has no Hanah from it at all. Which in that case, now, when the Gemara in other places, in Nozir and in Hodias, contrasts her with the Imahos, so what does that mean? In what way then is what she accomplished greater than the Imahos? So Rashi in Nozir explains, the Pirush that's printed under Rashi's name in Nozir is generally understood to not be from Rashi, but anyway, he explains that it's usually called the Meforish for that reason, but anyway, he explains that the vort is that the Imahos, we find that most of them gave a shivcha to their husbands to have children. We find that Sarah did that with Hagar, Rachel and Leah did that with Bilhah and Zilpah respectively. So here we're saying, on the other hand, that then they wanted to do that in order to create more shvatim, where here we're saying that, Yoel was Moser herself. Marsha doesn't really like that explanation. Tosfos also doesn't care much for it. So they explain, rather, the vort is, the Imahos, of course, when they're having relations with their respective husbands, they're doing it L'shem Shemayim in order to found a Jewish people. But after all, they're having Hanah from it as well, a natural thing. As a husband and wife have relations, they're both getting pleasure from it. Here, Yoel is getting no pleasure whatsoever from what she's doing, and she's doing it for the sake of the Jewish people. So in that sense, what she's accomplishing is greater. They're doing something, and they're getting Hanah from it. So it is Lashma, but there's still Hanah involved. Here, she's doing Lashma, and there's no Hanah involved. That's the greater thing. The Aruch HaNer kind of combines the two explanations. He says, look, by the Imahos, what you had is, when they wanted to have more, there should be more Shvatim, there should be more of a Jewish people, then they did both. They delegated it to their Shvachos, and when they were doing it themselves, then they had Hanah. Here she's doing it herself, she's not delegating it to anybody else, and she has no Hanah, so therefore in that sense, what she's doing is greater even than the Noshim Ba'oil, even greater than the Imahos. Anyway, so getting back to the Gemara then, so we have to figure out what exactly is the Ra over here. The Shlema Hostam, you can understand with Lavan and Yaakov, Hashem is telling Lavan not to speak anything good to Yaakov, because he may end up mentioning a name of Avodah Zarah, and for a tzaddik like Yaakov, he would be horrified that through him it should happen that a name of Avodah Zarah has to be mentioned. And in fact, Rashi points out that it did happen, because eventually, in the course of the whole argument over there, Lavan tells him, Loma ganavta eselikai, why just steal my gods? So that amounts to him mentioning as Avodah Zarah. Other Mephoshim explain, another point is also at the end of the whole thing, at the end of the parasha you have when they're making their peace treaty, that Lavan says, the God of Avraham, which refers to Hashem, and Lahavdol, the God of Nacho, which refers to Nacho's Getchkes, should judge between us. So we see also there he's mentioning a name of Avodah Zarah. So we can understand why to begin with Hashem is warning Lavan not to do that, because Yaakov wouldn't want that a name of Avodah Zarah is mentioned because of him. Elahocha, but over here, when we're talking about Sisera and and by the way, actually, Anaf Yosef discusses the issue over here. I mean, the fact is, in the end, so here Hashem had warned Lavan not to speak to Yaakov Mitov Adra for these reasons. And here we see that Lavan did end up speaking with Yaakov Mitov Adra, and he ended up mentioning these Getchkes in the two different contexts. So was he not afraid of going against what Hashem wants? He himself says to Yaakov, I would have the capability of harming you except that Hashem told me not to. So in that case, Hashem also told him not to say anything good, which he would consider good, namely a name of Avodah Zarah. Anaf Yosef explains that primarily what Hashem is concerned about and what he's telling Lavan make sure you don't do is to swear in the name of Avodah Zarah. So that we don't find Lavan doing. We find him mentioning Lomo Ganavta Esalikoi. We find him mentioning of a Kenocher, but we don't find him swearing in the name of any of them. Yaakov would have very strongly objected to that, and that's what Hashem wanted to forestall by telling Lavan not to do that. So in other words, the point is, again, Lavan would think that that's a fine and a good thing to do, to swear that I'll be loyal to you, but Hashem tells him don't, because the kind of swearing that you're going to do in the name of Avodah Zarah is something that Yaakov would consider bad. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara.
By Baruch Lavan,
he gave him a bracha. Fine, of course, he gives a bracha before he leaves. Nothing objectionable in that, necessarily, but to actually swear in the name of Avodah Zarah, that not. So actually, now that you mention, I mean, Anaf Yosef does consider and does continue. And he mentions, at the end, Lavan is taking leave of them by Nashik Lavan. He kissed them and then he left. Fine, it's a reasonable thing to do that he's gonna. It's a bit minag derecheret that you're gonna give a bracha to somebody. That's not so. So therefore, Hashem is warning him in advance. Don't bench them with the name of Avodah Zarah, which you would be likely to do. So fine, what bracha Lavan gave them, it doesn't say, but he may have given them just a generic bracha that Hashem should be with you. Or something like that, not mentioning Avodah Zarah. Okay, anyway, getting back to the Gemara. Elahocha, but here with Sisera and Yarl, my raw Ikka, what is the evil in it? What would we say exactly is so evil about it to the extent that we could say that even though normally a couple has relations and they both have Hanah from it, but here we're saying that Yarl would have absolutely no Hanah from it, what exactly would be so bad that would prevent her from having Hanah at all? And part of the question is, because you even find, for example, there's a relevant Gemara in Ksubas that mentions you can have a case of oinus, you can have a case where a woman is raped, and then in the course of it, while it's happening, sometimes it happens, you know, she starts feeling a certain pleasure from it. You can even have where people come to try to rescue her, and she says, leave him alone. And the halacha is we don't pay attention to that, and we still do whatever we can to save her and harm or kill the guy, because we say at that point, it's a yetzer albashal. Like at that point, she's seized by a yetzer, and then therefore, like, she's not thinking straight. So the question is, what makes us say over here that throughout the entire thing, all of these Sheva Be'ilis, not once should she feel any twinge of pleasure, ad kedekach, again, Zavorda, with Nevuah, can praise her as greater than the Imars? Why? What exactly was it about it? And the answer is because Shodiba Zuama. The answer is because Sisera, by having relations with her, injected into her Zuama, a ruchniistic of filthiness. So that's the kind of thing that she would be so repelled by that even as many times as it's happening, she's not having any hana. The Amr of Yochanan, as we find, the Goyim have such a zuama. The Shah Shabon Nachash al Chava, back when the snake was Ba on Chava. Now, Rashi explains in some other places, what do we mean Ba on Chava? Did he have relations with her? Well, in a way, yes. When Hashem asks Chava, what were you doing? What do you think you were doing? Eating from the Eitz Hadas, she says, Hanochashi Shi'ani Va'oichel. In the symbol meaning hishiani means he tricked me, Rashi mentions on the pasuk. But the Gemara darshins hishiani also meloshin nisuin, that he had in some way the snake had relations with Chava, and therefore when he put a zuam, or he put a ruchnistic of filthiness into her and into her descendants. So Yisrael sha'omdu al Har Sinai, the Jewish people who later on stood by Har Sinai, poska zuamasim. Then that zuama, that filthiness, went away from the Jewish people. Even when we first came to Har Sinai, in fact, which is one meaning, the Avudraham and a number of Rishonim explain, when we say in the Haggadah, ilu kervonu v'nei Har Sinai v'lo nosim v'las ha-Torah dayenu, what do you mean? What good would it have been to come in front of Har Sinai and not receive the Torah? This is one answer. Just coming to Har Sinai itself, remove the zuama. The Goyim who never stood by Har Sinai for Matan Torah, loy posko zuamos, and therefore the zuama never ceased. So now, a few hundred years later, it's you have Sisera and Yael, and therefore he still has that Zuama. And meanwhile, here the Gemara apparently is assuming, as we were saying before, that she's a Jew, not like I was quoting before from Rabbi. In the end, she killed him. But wait, so not like I was saying before from Rabbi Yaakov Emden that apparently she might have only been a Giyuris Tosha, but apparently the Gemara is taking it as a given that she was a Jew. Therefore, she didn't have that Zuama of a Goy, and therefore when the Goy is coming and then doing this with her, that brings a Zuama into her, which she resented so much ad kedei kach that there's no even the tiniest bit of pleasure that she would have from it, and therefore Devorah can praise her as greater than Minoshim Ba'oil. She did it only in order to kill him, but nevertheless, the Gemara was bothered by the question that if she had any Hanah from it, you can't call her greater than the Imaris. The Imaris also had Hanah when they did Bia, and they're also doing it L'Shem Mitzvah. That's what I was explaining before. Mind you, by the way, there is the Rif actually brings, he says, if you look carefully at the Psukim, what you find is, to begin with, when she first invited him in, there was nothing, she's telling him, basically, keep your hands off, keep your paws off me, I'm inviting you in order to protect your life, but don't think that you can take any liberties with me. After that, after she gives him the drinks and all that, then she says, so to begin with, she says, Stura Eli, which the word Stura means turn aside, like turn aside, don't you dare touch me. Afterwards, though, when he says, I want some water to drink, and then he grabbed a hold of her and did the Sheva Be'ilas, therefore, that is why afterwards she killed him. Because he had done that, where she had specifically warned him not to. So according to that, then, it's not that she, so according to that, according to the way the Rif over here is learning, it's not that she seduced him into it, as Tosfos is saying, but rather that he grabbed the opportunity when he thought he had it, and therefore now she took revenge on him by killing him. But still, the question would be, again, that if there was any Hana, if there was any physical Hana involved, you still can't call that what she accomplished over there is greater than the Imahos, and therefore, that's the Gemara's answer, is there was no Hana involved whatsoever because of the Zuama.
This is the way when she gave him first cheese and then wine?
That's actually thinking of Yehudis with Holofernes. That was 1,000 years later. Here the Pasuk says that she gave him, he asked for water to drink. Instead, she gave him milk or cream, which is very heavy stuff, and therefore that caused him to, so that made him sleepy. But now the Gemara is adding also the point, the Sheva Be'ilus, the 7 times that he had relations with her, also wore him out to the extent where now he's deeply asleep, and therefore he didn't realize when she's taking the tenth peg and killing him. So that's all the words in the Pesukim over there. Not Korah, Nafal, Shochav. Seven words in the Pesuk over there to referring to crouching down and lying. Poshet Pshat, you would say, in other words, that Devorah is saying. He lay down over there and went to sleep, and then he fell, and that's the end of him. But to hear the Gemara is darshining that all those extra words, meaning all those beasts.
The definition
of Gieris Toshav. Gieris Toshav is the feminine of Gier Toshav. It would mean somebody who was accepted as Shem Metzis Menenayach.
He said, after all, she's dead today.
Yeah, but that's what we're saying still, that there has to be, that there was no Hana in there, otherwise we can't call it purely Aveir Lishma, yeah.
I think he's saying, even though she was disgusted by it, he must have put on a happy face to show it.
Maybe she did, but that's the Gemara still bothered by. If there was any Hana involved, then nevertheless, if there was any actual Hana involved, then we still couldn't call it greater than the Imos, which is why we're saying that, yeah. All right, the Gemara says, fine. Later on in the Perek, we know that Chalitza has 3 major components. You have the taking off of the shoe, which we've discussed. She spits on the ground in front of him, and then you have, she says, and then she say certain psukim. He says, to begin with, she says, Mei and Yivomi Lahokim Lahokim Shem Yisrael, he says, Loi Chafach Lakachta, and so forth. So the Gemara says, Levi Nofak Lakiryasa. One time Levi went out. You know what? Maybe we probably just thought to leave this for tomorrow, actually. Okay, I should actually say, rather, tomorrow, actually, I'm not going to be here. So, tomorrow I won't be here. So we'll save this next piece for Sunday. Then we won't stop in the middle of it. Fine. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola. Gimel Pislev. The Zohar tells us that the rainbow is one of the simonim of the Gola. Now, what does that mean? So the Abarbanel explains, B'chol, why is the rainbow a symbol of, after the marble, that Hashem's not going to bring another marble? Because the rainbow represents the purification of the world that came about through the marble. Meaning, in other words, there's a famous question, the rainbow on the face of it is a natural phenomenon, how can we call it a simon that Hashem is not going to bring the marble again, an ois, that Hashem is not going to bring a marble again? So in a sicha, the Rebbe explains, before the marble, the clouds were very thick and coarse. So therefore, the sun's rays couldn't refract through them. Therefore, the Derech HaTeva, there was no rainbow because the clouds are too thick and opaque for the light to be able to penetrate through them. After the world has been purified by means of the marble, then the clouds are also more clearer and more translucent than they were before. They're able to actually, the sun's rays are able to penetrate through them, and they're able to refract the sun's rays, and therefore you have a rainbow. So that shows the connection. As if the Zohar is saying that there's a connection between the rainbow and Mashiach, the connection is, because in Mashiach's times, the whole world will be completely refined and transformed. So therefore, that's the same thing as before the marble versus after the marble. There is the same relationship as before Mashiach comes versus after it. Continuing with Halachas of Muktzah. We've been talking about the various major categories of Muktzah. And dinim of each one of them. So now you have certain kinds of kalim so far what we've said is like this. You have some kinds of kalim which are mukta, but nevertheless you're allowed to move them on Shabbos to sort of gufoy or makoymari. An example of that we said was a hammer that you can move it on Shabbos to crack nuts, or you can move it on Shabbos if you forgot it on a chair or a table and you need the space where it is. Then we said there are categories of mukta which you cannot move on Shabbos, even l'tzor of gufoy mekoymoy. We said that includes mukta machnas chesorin kis, something expensive and valuable where you would reserve it only for a certain use and you would never use it for something else. And we gave examples of that. And then you have things that are not a keli at all, like rocks and sticks. Now, then you have a keli which is primarily used for things of heter. Or sometimes you have, it can be used for both Isser and Heter. For example, a pot. A pot is used for Isser because cooking on Shabbos you can't do. But it's also used for Heter because you keep the food in it after it's cooked. And you serve it from the pot. So those would be one kind of thing. You are allowed to move them with Sorach Atzman. We talked about the other day, the concept called Mechama Letzel, where you have, for example, it's out in the sun and you're concerned it's going to break from the heat or whatever, and so you want to bring it inside to the shade. So we said Mukta things, you're not allowed to do that. But here you have a Keli that's used Leheter, or Leheter and Leister, you would be allowed to move it Mechama Letzel. Another example would be you can't move them for no purpose at all, but you can move them for any of those kinds of purposes. Another example would be a dirty keli. You have a concept called mukta machmas mius, but on Shabbos such things are mutter to move. So therefore that would be another example. You can move it not only sort of gufoy mekoymai, but also in order to save the keli itself. Now, then you have another category, which means any kind of svarim from which you're allowed to learn on Shabbos, as well as food, those you're even allowed to move them even if there's no purpose in it at all. So we have basically four different categories so far. We have things that you can't move at all, things that you can move with sort of gufoy mekoymai, things that you can move for either of those purposes, as well as you can also move it l'tzorach atzmo to save it from getting ruined where it is. And then you have things. Now we're saying that there are things that you can move even for no purpose at all, such as svarim that you're allowed to learn from on Shabbos, svarim and books that you would be allowed to read and learn from on Shabbos, and food. With that said, by the way, there is an interesting point. At the end of one of the letters in Tanya in Igeres HaKodesh, there's a part over there where the Alter Rebbe mentions that after all, only from Torah Shabbat Peh do we know what's the definition of Malacha on Shabbos. And he says, "V'loy tiltal avonim b'kodesh." It doesn't mean, for example, moving around heavy rocks and beams. And then there's in parenthesis, "Levad only." So there's a note from the Rebbe in Shurim B'Sefer HaTanya that points out that whether that word Levad belongs there or not is actually subject to a Machlokas Rishonim. What is the fundamental thing when we say you have to rest on Shabbos? For example, yes, it's true that moving those things around your house is not a Malacha in and of itself, but is a lack of resting on Shabbos. That Ramban writes, yes. So here we're talking about, for example, you're allowed to move around Sfarim on Shabbos, but we don't mean, let's say, for example, to just go and start carrying piles of Sfarim all over your house. That would be, at least according to the Ramban, a violation of the rest that you're supposed to have on Shabbos. But we're talking about Stam. You pick up a book for no particular reason, and you're putting it down, then that's not a problem on Shabbos. So that's not any of the categories of Mukta, is what we're saying.